When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Two Footed Podcast is brought to you by EPLindex.com and our presenting sponsor, Liberty Shield. Liberty Shield is a VPN provider. A virtual privacy network allows you to go online, change your location, access things you're geo-blocked from, while keeping your data safe. So, as an example, if you are a UK expat and want access to BBC iPlayer to watch Match of the Day, or ITV Hub, or All Four, but you get that message that says this content is not available in your location, a Liberty Shield VPN gets you around that block, allows you to watch whatever you want on those services while also keeping your data safe. And it goes further than that. It allows you to open up Netflix's entire library by just changing your IP address. Liberty Shield is the number one rated VPN provider on Trustpilot with 5-star ratings across the board. So go to libertyshield.com right now, use the code EPL25 and get either the hardware package or the software package. The hardware package is a router that you plug into your existing router, and any item you want to change the IP address on, be it your phone or your television, you connect that to the new Liberty Shield router. All other items can remain connected to your existing router. There's also a software package, which is instantly downloadable to your device and you can get using straight away. Again, libertyshield.com, EPL25 for 25% off at checkout. We're also brought to you by Home of Hopcroft, a giftware and homeware company located in Scotland but shipping worldwide. Check out homeofhopcroft.co.uk and do check out the EPL Index and Anfield Index shops, which you'll find on Etsy. Use the codes EPL10 or RED10 for 10% off at checkout. And lastly, do remember to check out A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. That podcast is on this feed before every Premier League match week. And then the EPL Roundtable, hosted by Kevin DeVries, on its own EPL Roundtable feed. So just search EPL Roundtable in your podcast device. And that's out after every match week. Now, on with the show. What's good, boys and girls? Two-Footed Podcast. Today is Monday. It is the 22nd of April, and we are in the last 4 weeks of this Premier League campaign. At the weekend, we had 7 Premier League games and 2 FA Cup semi-finals. So let's start with them. Manchester City 1, Chelsea 0. A decent game. Chelsea once again causing City a lot of problems. And if they had a striker worthy of the name, they probably win this game. The second he decided not to shoot. He actually had a third really good chance. But to be fair to the defence, they got back and his angle was quite narrow. He was quite a way out. But he should have scored at least 2 goals in this game. And Chelsea should have had a penalty. A Cole Palmer free kick. Jack Grealish jumps, arm out by his side. Slaps down at the ball, spikes the ball, stonewall penalty, not given. Manchester City ride that out, and Bernardo Silva wins it for them in the 84th minute. There's an element of luck, cross played in, Kukure is in good position. He goes to deal with the initial cross, it's dealt with before he gets there. Bounces back out, and Bernardo Silva, who he had been marking, finishes from close range. 1-0 to Manchester City, and they advance to the FA Cup final, where for the second year in a row, they will take on Manchester United, who are very, very, very lucky boys. Very lucky boys. Now, United, to be fair to them, dominated the first hour of this game. And Scott McTominay put them one up on 23. Well-timed run into the box, arriving late. I think the goalkeeper should do a little bit better at cutting the cross out. He doesn't. McTominay taps home. Just on the brink of half-time, Harry Maguire doubles the lead with a towering header, I suppose we'll call it, a powerful header off a set piece. Really good header, really good goal, fair play. 2-0. On 58 minutes, Bruno Fernandes makes it 3. It's a well-taken goal. And at this point, you're a little bit concerned that United are going to run away with this. It's going to be very embarrassing for Coventry. But on 71, Ellis Sims pulls one back. It's a nice, tidy finish. On 79, Callum O'Hare has a shot deflected, loops over the goalkeeper and into the corner. And then, in the 95th minute, it's a cross from the right-hand side. It strikes the arm of Wan-Bissaka. No question it's a penalty. Hadji Wright steps up, scores, and sends the game to extra time. Now, I did see some United fans say after the game, well, you can't blame Onana. It could have been 6 or 7 without him. Coventry had 5 shots on target in the whole game. 3 of them went in. In extra time, not a whole lot happened until stoppage time and extra time. So ball played down the left. It's cut back into a central area. And stepping onto it is Victor Torp, who finishes to complete the comeback. Coventry 4, Manchester United 3. It's one of the great moments in football. A championship side coming from nowhere, coming from 3-0 down at Wembley, the scene of heartbreak for them last May, might have been June, I think it was May, when they lost the playoff final on penalties. And now they've exercised that demon. They've come from behind. They've upset the giant that is Manchester United. It's one of the great moments in football history. And then it's taken away. And I'm not being funny, and I'm not being conspiratorial, but I don't for one second believe that that's offside. If you watch the image of that offside, number one, the ball is an elongated blur. And number two, when you look right in on the line, the line goes over the foot of the United defender. It doesn't begin at the end of his foot. It goes over his foot. I don't believe that's offside. I think Coventry have been robbed. And I think the game of football on the whole has been robbed. We go to penalties. Casemiro steps up. It's an awful penalty. It's as bad as Bernardo Silva's in the week. Hadji Wright scores. Diogo Dalo scores. Victor Torp scores. Christian Eriksen scores. Callum O'Hare stepped up and he just looked far too confident. Far too confident. It's not a great penalty. Onana makes the save. Bruno steps up. He's always going to score. Ben Sheaf steps up, captain, leader, one of their best players, He's had an outstanding game. He just leans back and fires it over the bar. And then Rasmus Højlund steps up and he scores and then embarrasses everybody with a celebration. Anthony showed that he has absolutely no class, cupping his ears and running by the Coventry players. Like, first and foremost, you are crap. Like, you're one of the worst players in the entirety of the Premier League. You cost £80 million when Manchester United bought you. And if they put you on the market right now, I would imagine 15 to 20 million is probably what he'd bring in. Like, if we look at his time at Manchester United, this season, he's played 34 games, about 1,700 minutes, 2 goals and 2 assists. Then last season, he played 44 games for Manchester United. He had 8 goals and 3 assists in about 3,200 minutes. In the Premier League, he had 4 goals and 2 assists. His goals last year, to be fair, one was against Barcelona, one was against Real Betis. He scored against Arsenal, Man City and Everton in 3 successive games, then didn't score again in the Premier League from the 9th of October against Everton, didn't score again until the 16th of April against Nottingham Forest. So he scored goals against 3 good teams, Man City, Arsenal and Barcelona. In the FA Cup, he scored against Everton. In the League Cup, he scored against Charlton. He got an assist against Reading. He got an assist against Wolves, an assist against Forest, and that's it. Abysmal. Absolutely abysmal. And a terrible set of lads at the same time. Harry Maguire, and to be fair, most of the United squad showed great class and also significant embarrassment at what had taken place by not celebrating. Maguire walked over and shook hands with the Coventry players, knowing that United did not deserve to get through to the FA Cup final. But through they are, and a whooping by City awaits them. In the Premier League, madness on Saturday. Luton 1, Brentford 5. Johan Wisse put Brentford 1 up on 24 minutes. He doubled the lead just before half-time. Ethan Pinnock made it 3 on 62. 2 minutes later, Keane Lewis Potter made it 4. And then Kevin Shadé got in on the act on 86. Luke Berry did pull one back for Luton, but they were absolutely demolished. And that was a Brentford team without Ivan Toney putting 5 past them. While that game was going on, Burnley went to Sheffield United and slapped the life out of them as well. Jakob Brun Larsen on 38, Lorenzo Sinon on 40, both of them via big deflections, to be fair. Gustavo Hammer pulled one back for Sheffield United on 52, but Lyle Foster made it 3-1 on 58, and then Johan Berg Gudmundsson on 71, making it 4. Burnley could have scored 6 or 7 in this game. And to be fair, Sheffield United could have scored 2 or 3, because having cost Burnley in the last 2 games, costing them a win against Brighton and a draw against Everton, Muric seemed absolutely keen on doing it again. But thankfully for him, Sheffield United were just absolutely useless and couldn't take advantage of it. Sheffield United, bottom of the league, now 7 points behind everybody. They do have a game in hand, but they're 7 points behind everybody else. They've conceded 88 goals. with five games left. United away, Newcastle away, Forest home, Everton away, Spurs home. Five games, already conceded 88 goals. The likelihood, I would suggest, is that they sail past the 100 goal conceded marker. But just for some historical context, they're conceding 2.67 goals per game, which works out at 101 goals conceded over a season. The current Premier League record is 100 goals by Swindon in 93-94. And Swindon played 42 games in that season. Right now, only that Swindon team, Ipswich in 94-95, which was also 42 games, and Derby County in 07-08, the worst team in Premier League history, have conceded more than Sheffield United with five games left. And when you look at those games, like, you could easily see United, Newcastle and Spurs all scoring 4, 5, 6. I just don't see any possible way they come in below the 100 mark. But as things stand, even if they just concede at the same 2.67 rate for those five games, even if things don't get worse and they don't get shellacked, that's still 13 goals, which would still be 101. Just continuing as it is. But if they get hammered in a couple of them, like, that's going to get much worse. Could be 105, could be 108. Who knows? Who knows what this team is capable of allowing in these next five games? Now, for Burnley, they now have a chance at survival. They really do. They have a chance to stay up. Everton's win, which we'll come on to, means that, barring another points deduction, Everton are probably going to be fine. So it really comes down to one of Nottingham Forest, Luton or Burnley will be in the division next year, and the other two will be gone. Now, Forest do have their appeal against the points deduction. We'll see what happens from that. But as things stand, like, Burnley could leap Forest and Luton. They're 2 points behind Luton, three behind Forest. They've got a much worse goal difference than Forest and a slightly worse goal difference than Luton. But if we look at their remaining games, Burnley play Manchester United away, Newcastle home, Tottenham away, but final day of the season, they play Nottingham Forest at home. So let's just say they can sneak a draw in the next three. Let's say they draw at home to Newcastle. And let's say Forest lose their next three, which are City at home, Sheffield United away. Now, that's probably what saves Forest. And then Chelsea at home. But if they lose all three, and Burnley have picked up a solitary point in the next three, then Forest would go to Turf Moor on the final day of the season in a situation where if they lose, they're down and Burnley will jump them. Now, obviously, that's not factoring Luton in here, but the point remains the same for Burnley to finish above Forest. With Luton, their last four games, Wolves away, Everton home, West Ham away, Fulham home final day of the season. There are two winnable games there. Everton home and Fulham home on the final day are both very winnable for Luton, but not if they play like they did at the weekend. That was unacceptable. But I do think we're now in a situation where it is three and two of them are going down. I think Everton, 4 points ahead of Forest and a game in hand, I think they're now going to be all right. We'll go back to the weekend's games then. The last game on Saturday, Wolves 0, Arsenal 2. Arsenal, good value for the win overall, but a little bit fortunate at the same time. Probably should have gone 1-0 down. Joe Gomes should score, and Raya is very lucky, knows very little about the save. Trossard's goal is a complete fluke, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. He is stretching for that ball, and he just big-toes it. And because he big-toes it, it gets a weird spin and just sort of lifts into the top corner. And the goalkeeper is expecting a shot that has more power on it and probably lower trajectory. But it is absolutely a fluke. He didn't mean to put it where it went. And that was on 45 minutes, just before half-time. And Martin Odegaard doubled the lead on 95. A decent finish from a close angle. Arsenal overall, good value for the win. Certainly the better team on the day, as you would expect, against a bottom-half team. But Wolves did cause them some problems. And like I said, Wolves probably should have gone in front. Most controversial Premier League game of the weekend. Everton 2, Nottingham Forest 0. Idrissa Gana Gueye scores on 29 to put Everton 1 up. Decent shot from range. Dwight McNeil scores on 76 to wrap it up. And it's a good goal, really good goal. This was not a good game of football. But it's the worst officiated game you'll see all season. Nottingham Forest were denied not one, not two, but three stonewall penalties. So, first half, ball breaks in the box to Giovanni Reyna. Ashley Young kicks through him, doesn't make contact with the ball. Somehow, no penalty given. Blatant stonewall penalty. Later on in the half, ball played over to the left, cross sent back in. Young has his hand out from his body. Very, very obvious handball. Arm in an unnatural position. Stonewall penalty, not given. And then in the second half, ball played in behind Young. Hudson-Odoi gets on the end of it. Young goes through him. Stonewall penalty, again, not given. Three penalties, all of which were against Ashley Young, two of which were definite yellow cards, nothing given. And Young then had the temerity, the unmitigated gall, in a post-match interview to say the referee got the decisions right. He's always been an unlikable sort, and he did once eat bird shit. So that'll tell you everything you need to know about Ashley Young. I would say he probably went back looking for seconds. Forrest, rightly furious. And unlike most Premier League clubs, decided not to just accept it, not to just take it lying down. Immediately after the game, they took to social media and posted the following. Three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept, nor should they. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. Nottingham Forest Football Club will consider its options. Now, what's funny to me is some of the reactions. I can't believe this is an official account tweeting this. The owner definitely logged in and tweeted this. His club, his rules. Here before deleted. Might be the most embarrassing tweet from an official club account of all time. I'm sorry. In no way is that embarrassing. It just isn't. And for Carragher and Neville, the jobs worth company men that they are, to go on Sky Sports and call for whoever tweeted that to be fired is absolutely shameful, but also absolutely expected of those two individuals. Nottingham Forest should not let this lie. And when the FA, who've said they're going to investigate it for bringing the game into misconduct, questioning the integrity of the game, there is no integrity left in football. Like, there's no integrity left, certainly in the Premier League, certainly with the PGMOL, and certainly with Sky Sports. There is no integrity left. So, hopefully, what we see is more clubs back Nottingham Forest. And if Forest get fined, they should refuse to pay it. They should absolutely refuse to pay it. And go as far as bringing the case to court if they have to. And let's get it all out in the open. An absolutely disgraceful display by the match official. How he misses them, I don't know. How the match officials miss these, I don't know. But, like, it is very, very questionable. Pre-game, having a Luton Town fan on VAR in a game against Nottingham Forest when relegation is so prevalently a threat for both. Moving on to maybe the biggest surprise of the weekend, not the winner, but the scoreline. Crystal Palace 5, West Ham 2. Now, prior to this game, there were a couple of things you said about Crystal Palace. Number one, been very unfortunate with injury this year. Number two, just don't score enough goals. They had 37 goals in 33 Premier League games this season. Let's go back and see when Crystal Palace last scored 5. Crystal Palace 23-24. Now, in a Premier League game, we're not going to look for cups or anything like that. Obviously hadn't happened this season. Last season, they scored 5 away to Leeds on April the 9th. So it had been over a year. Over a year. How many times then has it happened in the last 5 years, say? They scored 4 away to Watford the year before, but not 5. They scored 5 away to West Brom on the 6th of December 2020. They did not manage it the year before. In fact, they did not score more than 2 goals in a game in the 1920 season. So 18-19. No. All they did, they scored a 5-3 win over Bournemouth. So it's that 4 in the last 5 years. 4 times in the last 5 years. That's actually better than I thought it was going to be. To be fair, that's better than I thought it was going to be. Olise scored on 7 minutes. Eze scored on 16. Emerson Palmieri put through his own net on 20. Mateta made it 4 on 31. And it looked like West Ham might actually just sack David Moyes while the game was going on. Mikel Antonio pulled one back just before half time. Mateta made it 5 on 64. A just horrendous Dean Henderson own goal. Ball knocked back to him, fails to control it, and bounces into the net on 89. And that wraps the game up. 5-2 to Palace. Great win for them. Horrible for West Ham. Aston Villa 3, Bournemouth 1. Villa were scintillating going forward in this game. But Dom Solanke had put them 1-0 down, his goal from a penalty on 31. I think that's 18 Premier League goals for the season for Solanke. But Morgan Rodgers scores just before half-time. Moussa Diaby scores on 57. And Leon Bailey wraps it up on 78. What was really exciting about this Villa performance was that front four. Diaby playing as the 10, Bailey as the right winger, Rodgers as the left winger, Watkins up front. You've got pace and power everywhere, interchangeable. Diaby playing right side and left side, Bailey drifting central, Rodgers drifting central, Watkins dropping out the wings. It was just really fun to watch. And they were good value for another good win for them. Final game then, Fulham 1, Liverpool 3. Fairly uneventful first half, lit up by Trent Alexander-Arnold's free kick on 32 minutes. Timothy Castagnier would equalise on the brink of half time. Ryan Gravenberch scored an outstanding goal on 53, very Yaya Toure-esque. And then Diogo Jota, who had had an absolute sinker, wraps it up on 72 with just a typical Diogo Jota goal. So big win for Liverpool, especially off the back of Arsenal winning. The league table is as follows. Arsenal on 74, Liverpool on 74. Both have played 33 games. Man City on 73, they've played 32 games. So it is advantage City for right now. Aston Villa in fourth, 66 points from 34 games. Spurs, 60 points from 32 games. So still very much in the mix for top four, but Villa have opened a little bit of a gap in terms of goal difference. They have a 5-goal advantage there. Then it is a 10-point drop to Newcastle and Manchester United, both of whom have played 32 games. Then it's West Ham in eighth on 48 points from 34 games. Chelsea in ninth, 47 points from 31 games. So Chelsea still have 7 games left in the league. Then it is Brighton on 44 from 32 games. Wolves on 43 from 33 games. Fulham, 42 from 34. Bournemouth, 42 from 33. Crystal Palace, 36 points from 33 games. Brentford, 35 from 34. Everton, 30 from 33. Now, remember, Everton have had 8 points taken off them this season, so they would be above Palace if they had not cheated in previous years. Then it is Nottingham Forest on 26 points from 34 games. Luton, 25 from 34. Burnley, 23 from 34. And Sheffield United, 16 from 33. Half a point per game is what they're averaging. And 2.67 goals conceded. And when you look at those remaining fixtures, how many points do we think they'll take? I think they get beaten at Old Trafford and St. James's Park. I think they lose at home to Spurs in the final day. So you've got Forest at home and Everton away. And I would back Everton to beat them at Goodison. And I don't know that they can beat Nottingham Forest at home. I really don't know if that's something that they're capable of right now. Like, if Burnley have just got there and walloped them, why can't everybody else? So could they potentially finish on 16 points? Now, bear in mind, the worst ever Premier League team is Derby County, 07-08, 11 points. 11 points. Sunderland, 05-06, 15 points. Huddersfield, 18-19, 16 points. Aston Villa, 15-16, 17 points. And Sunderland, 02-03, 19 points. Now, I think there's a real chance that Sheffield United are finishing in that top five and doing Sunderland the massive solid of removing the embarrassment of having two of the five worst Premier League seasons of all time. I don't think they're getting above 19 points. I think if they get to 18 points, which would be two draws, it would actually be an achievement. Right now, they look like a team that's going to finish on 16 points. They really do. That, at the weekend, was absolutely horrendous. And, you know, last week I talked about where's the joy of being an Everton fan. And you could say the same about Sheffield United, given what's gone on at the moment. And I did say on Twitter that I was looking at what they've done this year. And, you know, imagine having to pay your hard-earned money to go and watch that muck that they serve up. But there is joy in being a Sheffield United fan. For example, last season, they finished second and were promoted. There's joy. The year before, they finished fifth in the championship and were in the playoffs. At least there's fun about the playoffs. The year before that, they finished 20th. They were abysmal. Everybody knows that. No need to get too deep into it. The year before that, they finished 9th in the Premier League in their first season back in the Premier League in a while. The year before that, they'd finished 2nd in the Championship. The year before that, 10th in the Championship, having just established themselves as a, you know, having just gotten back into the Championship. The year before that, they'd won League One. In the previous five seasons spent in League One, they'd at least made the playoffs three times. At least they'd done that. They'd gotten to a playoff final. Like, it's been a long time for them, obviously, since they were in the Premier League. 06-07, they were in it for 1 year, relegated straight away. So for Chris Wilder to get them up back in the 18-19 season when they finished second in the championship, come into the Premier League for 19-20 and finish ninth, that's joy. That's real joy. And like, they've had adventures. They've, you know, been up and down the divisions. At the very least, they've gotten to play different teams, gone to different grounds, you know? There's none of that with Everton. None of it at all. And like, long-term fans of Sheffield United, people that date back to the 80s, can remember that club being in the old Division 4, which we now know as League 2. Younger fans remember them being in the old Division 3, which we now know as League One, which they've also been in very recently. They've been in the Championship a bunch. They were in the old Division One, which again we now call the Championship, for a long time. This is their fourth crack at the Premier League. They've had two seasons from six in the Premier League where they didn't get relegated. This will be their fourth relegation. But at least they'll go down into the Championship and they'll be a good Championship team. They'll win a lot of games. They might even get promoted again next year. So there's joy in that. There's fun. There's an adventure, a journey. So while, yes, this is a disgraceful season, like, it is embarrassing, at least there's an adventure ahead. You know, another run through the Championship. Maybe, just maybe, if things break a certain way, there's a Sheffield derby, two Sheffield derbies next season. Because right now, with two games left, Sheffield Wednesday are out of the relegation zone in the Championship. A point ahead of Birmingham, three ahead of Huddersfield. And in the best form of anyone
down at the front end of the table. So maybe, just maybe, Sheffield Wednesday can survive and set up a couple of Sheffield derbies for next year, which would be massive. Because those teams don't overlap all that frequently anymore. One of them's up, the other one's down. You know, last year, Sheffield Wednesday get promoted from League One into the Championship, but at the same time, Sheffield United get promoted from the Championship to the Premier League. And historically, Sheffield Wednesday have been, well, not in a long time, but when I was growing up, Sheffield Wednesday were the bigger of the clubs in terms of they were in the Premier League. They were regular. They were fixture of the Premier League in the early days. They went down. They haven't been seen since. And we've seen Sheffield United three times since Wednesday went down. Shout out Seamus Crowley, the only Sheffield Wednesday fan that I knew growing up. I'm convinced the only one on this entire island. I'm convinced. If you know a Sheffield Wednesday fan from Ireland, get in touch with me. I have questions to ask that person. I'll go to break back after this. Right, welcome back. So I thought we'd take an out stroll around Europe and see what took place at the weekend. Athletic Club 1, Granada 1. Disappointing result for Athletic Club, but obviously off the back of their historic cup win. Probably just a bit of an energy dump. Still being, you know, just probably still drunk, let's be fair. Celta Vigo 4, Las Palmas 1. Huge win for Celta there. Rayo Vallecano 2, Osasuna 1. Valencia 1, Real Betis 2. Girona 4. Cadiz 1, Getafe 1, Real Sociedad 1, Almeria 1, Villarreal 2, Alaves 2, Atletico Madrid 0. Bad result for Atletico. Real Madrid 3, Barcelona 2 in El Clasico. If you watched it, hell of a game. Andreas Christensen put Barca 1 up. Vinicius Jr. equalised from the penalty spot on 18. Fermin Lopez scored on 69 to put Barca back in front. Lucas Vasquez on 17. And then Jude Bellingham in the 91st minute, giving Real the win. Barca not very happy about some of the officiating. And you can't really blame them. What can you say? What can you say? It is... La Liga has a major issue right now in terms of its officiating and what they're using for their officiating. So I get the feeling there's going to be quite a big inquest this summer in terms of the overall picture of La Liga. Now, Real, they're thrilled with how things are going. Absolutely thrilled. But Barcelona, this was a big game for them. They're not going to win the title, but if they'd beaten Real, it would have just been a sign of intent. And obviously, the moment I'm referring to is Lamine Yamal's shot. Andre Lunin kind of clawing it out. Barca adamant that the ball had crossed the line. VAR deciding that it hasn't. But La Liga not having goal line technology because they weren't willing to pay the 3 million euro fee to have it for the season. Like, you're one of the biggest leagues in the world. How do you not have this technology? And how are they allowed to not have it, more to the point? Like, if VAR has been forced on everybody, and it's questionable at best, goal line technology, which, other than the one fail a few years ago when Villa stayed up based on goal line technology, other than that, it has been flawless. It should be mandatory
across as many leagues as can afford it. And Liga absolutely can afford it. So, Real top 11 points clear of Barca, who are 2 points clear of Girona. Girona are now 7 points clear of Atletico Madrid and nailed on to finish in the top four, likely to finish in the top three. Atleti fourth, Bilbao fifth, Real Sociedad sixth, Real Betis seventh, Valencia eighth, Villarreal, Getafe, Osasuna, Las Palmas, Alaves, Sevilla, Rayo Vallecano, Mallorca, Celta Vigo with their win at the weekend, now 6 points ahead of Cadiz. That's why it was so important. Cadiz, Granada and Almeria are the bottom three. Granada and Almeria, they're already gone. We can say goodbye to them. Granada, in theory, can stay up, but they're not going to stay up. Almeria are relegated. Moving to Italy, to Serie A, Genoa 0, Lazio 1, Cagliari 2, Juve 2, Empoli 1, Napoli 0. Napoli's disastrous season continues. Verona 1, Udinese 0, Sassuolo 0, Lecce 3, Torino 0, Frosinone 0, Salernitana 0, Fiorentina 2, Monza 1, Atalanta 2. We do have two games today. Roma-Bologna, 5:30 kickoff, should be a belter. 7:45 kickoff, Milan versus Inter. What a game that could be. And as an added incentive for Inter, if they win, they go 16 points clear. Excuse me. They go 17 points clear at the top of the table with five games left. If they win tonight, they win the league title. They have 83 points. Milan have 69. Win tonight and Inter are league champions. Draw, and it goes to the next game, and then they'll win it. And it'll be less fun if they win it against somebody who's not their biggest rival. Juventus are 4 points back of Milan. Bologna are 5 points back of Juve. Roma are 4 points back of Bologna with the game in hand. So if they can win tonight, they move to within 1 point of Bologna, and they still have that game in hand. That could be huge. Then it's Atalanta, then Lazio, Napoli in eighth, Fiorentina in ninth, Torino 10th, Monza 11th, Genoa 12th, Lecce, Cagliari, Verona, Empoli. And then it's basically Salernitana are gone. Two of three will go. Udinese, Frosinone and Sassuolo. Two of three. Udinese, for as long as I can remember, have been a fixture in Serie A. Let me just have a look and see how long they've been in Serie A in this run. Well, they've been there since at least 2000-2001. They've been a consistent in the division. 95-96. 95-96, they have been in the top flight. And that potentially comes to an end this season if they don't book their ideas up. In the Bundesliga, Eintracht Frankfurt 3, Augsburg 1, Heidenheim 1, RB Leipzig 2, Wolfsburg 1, Bochum 0, Cologne 0, Darmstadt 2, Hoffenheim 4, Mönchengladbach 3, Union Berlin 1, Bayern Munich 5, another goal for Harry Kane. And if we can just all take a moment, I know it's fun to laugh at Harry Kane not winning anything and joining Bayern and Bayern's reign of dominance coming to an end. But Harry Kane, in 41 games this season, 40 goals and 13 assists, he has lived up to his end of the bargain. He has been let down by those around him. Big upset, Werder Bremen 2, Stuttgart 1. Dortmund 1, Leverkusen 1. Then yet another late goal for Leverkusen to sustain that unbeaten run. And then Freiburg 1, Mainz 1. So Leverkusen are obviously champions, as we know. Bayern second, Stuttgart third, Leipzig fourth, Dortmund fifth. Stuttgart have a 6-point lead and superior goal difference over Dortmund. So top four should be pretty secure for them. Even if Leipzig manage to overhaul them, I don't think Dortmund will. Then it's Eintracht Frankfurt, then Freiburg, Augsburg, Hoffenheim, Heidenheim, Werder, 11th, I would have taken that start of the year. Gladbach, Wolfsburg, Union Berlin, who looked dead and buried 10 weeks into the season, but should be okay. Mainz have pulled themselves out of the relegation slots with a really, really good run. Then Bochum, Cologne and Darmstadt are going down. Bochum are going to be in the relegation playoff unless they can get themselves back ahead of Mainz. In France then, with the big game obviously last night, but prior to that, Nice 3, Lorient 0, Nantes 0, Rennes 3, Lens 1, Clermont-Foot 0, Le Havre 0, Metz 1. That was a bit of an upset. I wasn't really expecting Metz to win away from home because they just haven't been good away from home. Lille 1, Strasbourg 0, Reims 1, Montpellier 2, Brest 0, Monaco 2, big result there, Toulouse 2, Marseille 2, and PSG 4, Lyon 1. Matic own goal, Lucas Beraldo, Goncalo Ramos, Ernest Nuama scored for Lyon, and then Ramos wrapped it up just before half-time. Goncalo Ramos with his second of the game, PSG's fourth, and they are now on the brink of yet another league title. They're 11 points clear with 5 games left to play. Monaco beating Brest now go above them into second with the game in hand on Brest. Then it is Brest, then Lille, who also have a game in hand on Brest and only 1 point behind and in much better form. So potentially Champions League berth for them. Nice, they've just been a mess since the turn of the year. In fifth, very, very inconsistent. Lens in sixth, Rennes in seventh, Lyon in eighth, Marseille ninth, Reims 10th, Toulouse, Montpellier, Strasbourg, Nantes. Metz are out of the relegation spots, which is huge. Le Havre now into the relegation playoff as a result of losing to Metz. Metz jumped from, I think they were 17th going into the weekend, but Lorient getting beaten heavily by Nice, combined with the Metz win, jumps Metz to 15th, Le Havre 16th, Lorient now 17th and staring at relegation. Not a great thing for them, considering if we look back to the beginning of January last season, they were challenging for Champions League. And now look at them. Clermont Foot bottom, they will be going down for certain. We had no games in the Scottish Premiership at the weekend, but we did have the two Scottish Cup semi-finals. Aberdeen 3, Celtic 3. How Celtic allowed this to end up the way it did, I've no idea. They did go 1-0 down. Miowski scored. Then Kuhn and Forrest put them 2-1 up. Sockler equalised in the last minute. Went to extra time. Matt O'Reilly scored, put Celtic back ahead. And then again, in the last minute of extra time, Angus McDonald scored, and it went to penalties. And Celtic finally ended up winning 6-5 on penalties. But who thought it was a good idea for Joe Hart to take the fifth penalty? Like, whose decision was that? Absolute brain fart. And almost cost them. Thankfully, it didn't. They will take on Rangers, who beat Hearts 2-0. Cyril Destres with both goals in that one. So that Scottish Cup final will take place on May 25th. Obviously, the Scottish Premiership is still in the offing. Rangers and Dundee drew 0-0 last week, which is a bad result for Rangers because that was their game in hand. And they were, you know, kind of banking on that one
to keep them in line with Celtic. But Celtic are top, 3 points clear of Rangers, and the title is between them with five games left, and a massive Old Firm derby coming up on the 11th of May at Parkhead. It's an early kickoff, should be an absolute belter. In the Eredivisie, we also had no games. We do have a full round of games on Wednesday, Thursday, and then the weekend, but there's no, which is weird. They're splitting it across basically 5 days, but it is what it is. We did have the Dutch Cup final, which Feyenoord beat NEC 1-0. Piazza with the only goal of the game. So congrats to Feyenoord on that one. In Portugal, Sporting moved yet another step closer to their second title under Ruben Amorim with a 3-0 win last night over Vitória. In the other games, Rio Ave and Arouca was 1-1. Moronense 0, Gil Vicente 1, Boa Vista 1, Estrela 1, Braga 2, Vizela 1, Chaves 2, Estoril 2, Famalicão 2, Porto Moronense 2, Casapia 1, Porto 2, Sporting 3, Vitória 0. Tonight is Ferenc versus Benfica. Assuming Benfica win that game, there will be a 7-point gap from Sporting to Benfica with four games left. So two more wins for Sporting from their last four will be enough for them. We might as well have a look in Turkey and see how the Super League is going. Obviously, a lot of controversy in Turkish football of late. Beşiktaş 2. I can't pronounce half these teams, so let's just say Beşiktaş 1. Trabzonspor 1. They beat Kayserispor. Alanyaspor beat Konyaspor 2-0. Fatih beat Istanbulspor 2-1. Ankara Gökçü? That's who Beşiktaş beat anyway. Istanbul Beşiktaş beat Rizespor 2-0. Antalyaspor, not to be confused with Alanyaspor, Antalyaspor beat Hatayspor 2-1. Galatasaray beat Pendikspor 2-1. And tonight, Sivasspor take on Fenerbahçe. Galatasaray are 5 points clear, but Fenerbahçe have that game tonight. Do these teams have to play again? I think I looked and they did. Yeah, they do. They play match day 37. So that is huge. That will be a title decider. We can check out what took place in Greece over the weekend because they're in their final stretch. Panathinaikos beat Lamia 5-0. AEK Athens beat Aris 2-1. Olympiakos beat PAOK 2-1. And Panathinaikos beat Giannina 2-1. That was at the weekend. There were also three games on Saturday. Offi against Volos, 2-1 Offi. OFI, I don't know. Panathinaikos, they beat Asteres 2-0. And Kifisia beat Atromitos 2-1. AK Athens are top. Panathinaikos are second, a point between them. PAOK are 4 points back, but do have a game in hand. Olympiakos are a point behind PAOK, but like them, have a game in hand against the top teams. This promises to be quite the battle. They've got, I think, six games left. Four games left to decide the title. Nowhere else we want to go, is there? Oh, there was one other massive game that took place yesterday in the Argentine Premier Division. Boca Juniors beat River Plate 3-2 in the Super Clásico. River Plate went 1-0 through Boria on 10 minutes. Merentiel equalised just before half-time. Then he put Boca ahead on 67. Cavani put them ahead on 62. Merentiel made it 3 on 67. And Paulo Dias pulled one back in stoppage time, but it wasn't enough. Now, it's a bad result for River because Boca are not particularly good this year and haven't been for a couple of years. River are top of Group A. Boca now fourth in Group B, but going into the weekend, they were sitting in, I think, fifth or sixth and facing not getting through to the end of season playoffs. Or the end of, yeah, the top phase in the next round. The atmosphere at those games is unreal. Absolutely unreal. It really does put the European leagues to shame. Even the good European leagues aren't anywhere close to what we see in South America. In Brazil at the weekend, Grêmio beat Coluba 1-0. Bragantino beat Corinthians 1-0. Atlético Mineiro beat Cruzeiro 3-0. Palmeiras and Flamengo drew out 0-0. Vitória 2, Bahia 2, Atlético Paranaense 1, Internacional 1, Botafogo 5, Juventude 1, and Atlético Goianiense 0, São Paulo 3. Bragantino are top, only three games played. Flamengo second, Botafogo third. Palmeiras down 11th, looking for title number 3 under Abel Ferreira. But so long to go in that competition. There's no point in really delving in too much. We will leave it there back after this. Right, welcome back. We're just going to run through the gossip and leave it there for today. Zinedine Zidane is closely monitoring the situation at Manchester United and would prefer to take charge at Old Trafford rather than at Bayern Munich. At one point, Zidane was taking over at Liverpool, United and Bayern on Friday. Bayern have not contacted Zidane about succeeding Thomas Tuchel. Ralf Rangnick has been discussed by Bayern's hierarchy, and Roberto De Zerbi is also on their list of candidates. Bruno Guimaraes has indicated he intends to remain at the club next season after buying a house in the northeast. Manchester United could be in line to receive an extra $3.4 million for the loan of Jadon Sancho if Borussia Dortmund reached the Champions League final. Interesting. Ian Matson has told Chelsea he wants to leave on a permanent basis and is keen to stay with Borussia Dortmund. I'm sure he will go. There's plenty of clubs that would want him, so I'm sure he will go. Manchester United face competition from Atletico Madrid for the signing of Jean-Claire Todibo. Bayern Munich are interested in Frankie de Jong. Be a horrible fit. Real Madrid may hold out until 2025 to sign Alphonso Davies when he would be on a free. Fulham are prepared to listen to offers for Carlos Vinicius, who is on loan at Galatasaray. I actually forgot that they still owned him. Nacho has told Real Madrid he plans to leave at the end of the season. I'm guessing he goes to MLS or Saudi, but an incredible servant to the club. Inter Milan could be an option. I don't really see that one. Manchester United will not make Sofyan Amrabat's deal permanent, and nobody is surprised. Nobody is surprised by that. Real Madrid are leading the race to sign Bernardo Silva this summer. I don't think that's true. Barcelona are set to rival Real for the player. I think that is true, but I don't know if they have the money. West Ham had agreed a deal to sign Cole Palmer before Chelsea signed him last summer. I don't think that's true. Maybe on loan, but not on a permanent. Atletico Madrid would renew the contract of Antoine Griezmann with his current contract set to run out in 2026. I don't think that's true either. Arsenal, Juventus, and Atletico Madrid are vying to sign Santiago Jimenez. He's very good. I do very much like him. Juventus, I suppose, if they sell Vlahovic, he'd make some sense for Arsenal, and he'd be great for Atleti. Barcelona are desperate to bring Dani Olmo back to the club. He has a 60 million euro release clause, so they won't be buying him. Aaron Ramsdale is a target for Wolves, who may look to sell Jose Sa to a Saudi Arabian club. That all makes sense. Wolves are about Ramsdale's level, to be fair. Borussia Dortmund are in active talks to renew the contract of Mats Hummels. Have they not watched him play? Turkish Super League club Galatasaray are planning a move for Ryan Gravenberch in the summer. Hopefully that's successful. Manchester United and Arsenal are set to rival AC Milan for the signing of Joshua Zirkzee. Real Madrid defender Nacho Fernandez has decided to leave the club this summer, with the 34-year-old eyeing a move to MLS. So that does make sense. Portuguese midfielder Fabio Carvalho is set to stay and fight for his place at Liverpool next season under the club's new manager, despite interest from Hull, where he's currently on loan. Barcelona are interested in signing Luis Diaz. Again, they have no money. Wolves are considering Aaron Ramsdale, Quevin Kelleher, and Anthony Patterson as replacements for Jose Sa. Kelleher would be expensive. Ramsdale, Arsenal would want a big fee for him. And Patterson, I think, is Liverpool's first choice to replace Kelleher. So we'll see. Man City are willing to listen to offers for Jack Grealish this summer. I don't know where those offers would come from. As good as he can be on his day, like, who's going to pay the wages that he's on? There's only a handful of clubs in the world that can, and none of them will want him. Barcelona will listen to offers for Ronald Araujo this summer. I doubt it. Crystal Palace could join the race for Rafael Onyedeka of Club Bruges. He's quite a good player. Arsenal, Liverpool, and Manchester United are among the clubs interested in signing Ferland Mendy. I doubt it. Arsenal, maybe. United, possibly. Liverpool, very unlikely. Not at 28. Borussia Dortmund will have to play a club record 35 million if they want to turn Ian Maatsen's loan into a permanent deal. Not sure why, because his buyout is 10 million lower than that. Jim Ratcliffe contacted Thomas Tuchel to see if he would make a commitment to the club. I don't think that's true. A number of Premier League clubs are considering a move for Atletico Madrid's 19-year-old Spanish striker, Samu Morodion, who's on loan at Alaves. Manchester City faced competition with Liverpool to sign Reyhan Nouri. Arsenal will have to play 51 million if they want to sign Dusan Vlahovic this summer. I'm fairly certain that would represent a loss for Juve. It would represent a considerable loss for Juve, so I don't think that's going to be through. Manchester United and Newcastle could move for Adrian Rabiot if he doesn't sign a new contract at Juve. Leeds are likely to accept offers close to 30 million for Wilfred Nanto, who is attracting interest from Premier League clubs. Now, he's very talented, but I don't know why you'd pay that kind of money for him. Like, it's not exactly like he's lit up the championship. He's not a starter for Leeds. He's not in their sort of first 11. Dan James and Somerville have largely been the starting wingers. And he has played a bit, you know, he's played a few starts, a number of starts. He had a run in the team back in February, was dropped, came back in, was dropped again. And he did start against Blackburn in their most recent game. But let's see, 15 starts this year in 44 games. Now, I know he missed a few with injury, but still, like, he's not first choice. He scored 7 goals. I don't think you'd be spending that kind of money on him. Newcastle are lining up a 25 million move for Dean Huijsen, who's currently on loan at Roma from Juventus. A very, very talented young defender with a big-time future. Two-footed, can play all across the back line. very, very promising. Be very interesting what he does internationally as well. He has been part of the Dutch national setup, but earlier this year, he did play for Spain's under-21 team, and I believe is now tied to Spain. I could be wrong about that, but I believe he is. Yeah. There we go, folks. I will see you all tomorrow. Take care. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.